You're listening to CHRY 105.5, your leading source for diversity.
That's right. This is CHRY 105.5 FM, and this is Amandala, an African perspective, your source for news and views from the African continent. This is the only place right here on CHRY that you're going to get this kind of content. There's no more shows anymore on any of the community stations here in Toronto that bring you an African perspective on current news and views, bring you in-depth interviews. So not just the headlines that you're going to hear on the other news media outlets. We get into the issues very deeply, and we take our time to unpack. As you know, for the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about the Ebola crisis in West Africa, but really been looking at it from a critical perspective. So that's the kind of program you're going to get with us. And another theme that I guess we've been looking at exploring for many years is, one might call the Nkrumist dream of a united Africa. There was calls from Nkrumah when countries were starting to decolonize that the only way for economic and political development is for Africa to unite. Of course, these calls have been coming, in various forms from the diaspora, but the calls had also been coming from the continent, like I said, from Nkrumah and other left and politically progressive, people, movements on the continent. And I'm joined on the line now by Ndogo Faye, who will be talking to us about a new initiative called the African Federalist Harambee. And this is kind of a new push. It's a website, it's a hub for a new push to start thinking about a United States of Africa and African federalism. So thank you, Ndogo, for joining us.
Thank you, Sister Ome, and greeting to your people, to the people who are listening, and I thank them for taking time to listen to you. It sounds like really this is, if I was in Toronto, this is a program that I won't be missing on Sunday.
That is amazing. I think we'll have to put that as a little ad on the radio station to get more listeners. So it seems that you've been working for very many years on an African federalism, trying to advocate this kind of unity and political direction for the development of the continent. So can you start maybe by telling us a bit about the political history of the idea behind like a United States of Africa or African federalism, the ideas around Africa must unite?
Well, the history, as you mentioned it in the introduction, is really can be pushed back to Nkrumah, Dr. Nkrumah, and then also Sheikh Anta Diop. And recently you have had also someone who have been the General Secretary of the OAU, Edem Kodjo, who after, being sold to the intergovernmentalist option that the OAU and the African Union represent, come to realize that indeed Nkrumah was right. And also you have had people like Julius Nyerere, who have come around and realized that what Nkrumah, the Africa must unite, in 1997, in fact, the anniversary of the Ghana independence, he made it clear that, Nkrumah was right when he said that Africa must unite. But the idea of uniting Africa really can be traced back to Nkrumah, who is the one who realized that, the independent states in Africa are mostly non-viable, and that the only way that they can make it is really if they unite politically and form a federalist system that will manage the portion of their sovereignty that they themselves can't manage. Let's say, for example, foreign policy, let's say currency, let's say military security and stuff, and that's really where the idea can be traced to Dr. Nkrumah.
And as I had mentioned in the introduction as well, there is Pan-Africanism, right?
Absolutely.
That comes from the diaspora. There is like absolutely. It was developed separately from what was going on in Africa. I think that, but it's a different kind of Pan-Africanism that you're advocating for. It's a very political, economic, strategic Pan-Africanism. Strategic not meaning that it doesn't have maybe cultural remnants, but there is a particular kind of real politic agenda here. So is there a distinction to be made between a Pan-Africanism that maybe we're more used to, that is more about culture, black unity, and the likes, versus, I think, African federalism, for example, that's very much like what you're talking about like, you know, strategic foreign policy, currency, economic development and stability.
Absolutely.
I'm just wondering if you could maybe talk about that.
Yes. You see, Pan-Africanism is a nationalist ideology. It is for the liberation and the recovery of the dignity of black people. Any black person, any person of African descent, whether they are find themselves in the Middle East or in the Caribbean or in America or Africa, at the time that Pan-Africanism was at its heat, was really when African people were under the control of some foreign forces. And that was, you know, at that time, it's a national ideal for the liberation, you know, the recovery of the dignity of African people and the recovery of their positive sovereignty, which was lost since about the 16th century. Now, after the liberation of Africa and after the changes of the status, the legal status of Africans, let's say in America, for example, and the independence of the Caribbean countries, then the struggle changed or must have or should have changed its form. Because it's no longer a matter of liberating us, it's a matter of building us, ourselves, entity that can have a positive sovereignty where we can matter on the international scene. And that transition, Nkrumah was trying to make it in the 1950s, in the 1960s, but at that time people could not really see that from Pan-Africanism we should move to African federalism, which is political unity. Because political unity is the only way for us to regain our positive sovereignty that we had during the Mali Empire, during the Songhai Empire, during the empire that existed on the continent. These empire, the Ghana Empire, they were positive sovereignty because they decided what they wanted to do without having to consult with anybody else. But since that time, that has been lost. So African federalism is a different ideology. It is solely oriented towards the political unification of the continent, a federalist compact between the different African countries, and also between the countries where Africans have been moved to against their will. Let's say, for example, Jamaica. Let's say, for example, Haiti. These are countries where the majority of the people are black. And these countries in our in the project of the African federalists, these countries are indeed and should be indeed candidate for this unification. So that's why we call it the United African State, not the United States of Africa, which is will refer to the continent, but the United African State. Well, Michael Garbe also, this is I said initially federalism can be traced back to Nkrumah, but I mean, that's a little bit of a mistake there, too, because Marcus Garvey was the first one who really called for a strong African state. It was not a federalism, you know, state that he was asking for, but he wanted to build a positive sovereignty on the continent. So the need for a positive sovereignty on the continent can be traced back, which is indeed what Nkrumah kind of have, you know, reactualized by calling for federalism.
And if you could tell us a bit about what this would look like practically. You said that it would be, have there been thought to what the structure would look like if there was a joint foreign policy, if there was a, a communal currency? What are some of the maybe like practical outcomes of this kind of federalism?
Well, the first major outcome for this federal project would be that Africans will be free to go from, you know, Dar es Salaam to Dakar without having to worry about anything. The second, you know, and there will be the creation of means like rapid trains or whatever, to travel through the continent, you know, without having to worry about, you know, being asked for a visa, without having to ask for the authorization to set a business. Someone who is born in Dakar or in Mogadishu can set up business in Cape Town if they want to. You know, this free movement of the people will make it impossible for the state to oppress anyone, because people will be free to move. If they don't like what is happening in your state, they move to another state. So that will ease the mind of people, that will ease the grasp that some of these governments have on their people. The second thing is that, you know, we will be able to, let's just say, it will look like, let's say, the American experience. In the American experience, the American colonies had debts in the beginning, but the federal government assumed these debts, took them over, and told the state, yes, you don't have to worry about paying this debt. The federal government is going to pay them. So on the economical side, it will already help the state be able to focus on national and local development and opportunities inside these states. In terms of the military, in terms of diplomacy, all these will be expenses that will be eased off. And if you calculate just the cost of having 54 different governments, 54 armies, 54 diplomatic corps, you know, that's a lot of money that we're spending. And that money could be actually put towards the development of the continent. The other thing is that we have had many, many treaties with foreign countries that are not to our advantage, and these treaties are still here. This federal government will have the muscles to renegotiate these treaties. And the other thing is that people also talk about reparation. No African country can demand reparation for the wrong that have been done to Africa, because they don't have the muscles to do so. A federal government of Africa will have the muscles to say, look, this is what you've done to my people, and this is how I want you to repair it. Because of the important role that Africa occupies in the world economy, where many of the minerals that are fundamental to the functioning of economy can only be found in Africa, this will make people listen. Number three, if we have a federal government, we could have a federal currency. We will determine, you know, that we will force people to pay us in our own currency. And we will be able to borrow more on the international, because we are going to be more solvable. So there are many, many different gains that Africans will immediately gain from this. And then that's the dream of Nkrumah.
And has there been any movement towards that kind of federalism? The Organization of African States, for example, was a sort of kind of, you know, African federalism light that, you know, then became the African Union, which was a bit of a different trajectory. So can you tell us maybe about historically what initiatives have taken place on the continent towards a form of African federalism, you know, after Nkrumah?
There hasn't been, to my knowledge. I mean, my focus is on African unity and my studies and my research, but there hasn't really been an initiative that is geared towards a federalist movement to push for a federalist union since Nkrumah. Even in Nkrumah's time, there was a bit of a confusion between Pan-Africanism and African federalism. And Nkrumah, that's why he thought that everyone else can will be willing to join. But what we're starting now is to be able to put a differentiation between people who in Africa or in the African diaspora who are interested in the political unification of the continent, to regroup, create a network, wage a campaign for the birth of a United African State within less than a generation. That's what it has really, this is the first time that there will be, in my knowledge, that there will be a federalist gathering of Africans. Every Pan-Africanist is not going to be invited to this gathering, because there are Pan-Africanists who are not for political union. So that will make the big difference. Well, all the people who are there are going to be Pan-Africanist or sympathizers of the Pan-Africanist cause. But it's not all the Pan-Africanists who are going to be there. I could give you an example of Pan-Africans who have been Pan-African, like, let's say, Ufuet Boigny. Ufuet Boigny, he was the first head of the Democratic Congress of Africa, RDA. He was a Pan-African because his organization was a Pan-African organization. It transcended the borders of these African countries, but he was one of the strongest anti-federalists. You have people like Museveni, for example, who do not want to have anything to do with political unification, but they are Pan-Africans at the meantime. So you have this that we have to distinguish, these two ideologies.
And that's, a very important point, I think, in terms of what this vision looks like. I think we often, talk about Pan-Africanism without having, some sort of political vision of what that would look like. So this is a step in that direction. It's a very particular ideology of Pan-Africanism, but also one with, a political sense of
agenda.
Organization, right? So this is all, the hub of this is the website AfricanPublius.com.
We use the Publius. If you are there is a brother from Ghana who wrote this piece called The African Publius. And it was a piece about Kwame Nkrumah.
Mm-hmm.
And the name Publius come actually from the pen name that Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay had used when they wrote the Federalist Papers. And the Federalist Papers were a debate in favor of the ratification of the Constitution that was adopted by the Philadelphia Congress of 1787. So it is really the name African Publius means African Federalist.
Okay.
In a way.
And so I was browsing the website, and there is a conversation going on there, which I thought maybe we could bring on air. Two interesting questions that, in the last 10 minutes that we have, or last 7 minutes that we have, that I'd like to ask you about. The first was, if we think of Pan-Africanists on the African continent historically, right? We think of Nkrumah, but we also think of Muammar Gaddafi, right? Gaddafi mm-hmm. was very instrumental in the setting up of the Organization of African Unity, of the African Union, various Pan-African initiatives, and also regional initiatives, right? Like the Sahelian-Saharan Union, which, mm-hmm. He was also a big proponent of regionalism and Pan-Africanism as well as Pan-Arabism, right? So
absolutely.
In terms of, and this is one of the questions that seems to be circulating on the website, how would this play out in terms of African-Arab relations? And with the caveat that, these distinct groups, African as one group, Arab as another group, don't really exist to some extent, but then do on another extent. So what would that look like for the North African region?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Pan-Africanism, when you go back to the origin, to the root, Pan-African is for the plight of black people, not Arabs, but black people. When I say not Arabs, I'm not talking about Arabs who are of African descent, because a lot of people don't realize that the first African slave revolution that happened wasn't in Haiti; it was in Iraq that happened. And there are indeed, what I mean here is that in Africa, there is a brother, the late Ali Mazrui. He wrote an excellent piece talking about African of the blood and African of the soil. Every single person on the continent of Africa, whether you are Arab or black, whether you are, sub-Saharan or North African, you are an African of the soil. But for him, all the Africans who are in the diaspora are African of the blood. Because if you see a black person on the street, like Peter Tosh, you say, as long as you are a black man, you are an African, people will assume that you are from Africa. So that, that's what he called African of the blood. So this initiative And that's why we are talking about federalism also. Concern Africans of the blood as well as Africans of the soil. Whether you are Arab in Morocco, you know, and you are white, or South African and you are white, or in Rhodesia, or former Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, you are white, this initiative, federalism, concerns you. But Pan-Africanism is not really what you are fighting for, the ideals of Pan-Africanism. Because, you know, of the history of the relationship between the Arabs and Africans, slavery has happened, and there has been indeed, and there are still issues in Sudan, in Mauritania, the Haritians in Mauritania, for example, are still under Arab control in a certain way, you know. And those issues, Pan-Africanism still has to fight for them. But at the same time, you know, African federalism need to unite all of the Africans, whether they are on the continent, whether they're white or black, or whether they are abroad, meaning like in Haiti or Jamaica or wherever.
And that's another point that you brought up in the beginning that I would like to ask about, is that this idea of African federalism is not only the 52 countries on the continent, but you were saying must also include the diaspora, so countries that are, you know, populated by African descendants. Can you talk about, you know, what place in African federalism Caribbean countries, for example, would have and the roles that they would have?
They will have exactly the same place that Hawaii have in the U.S. Hawaii is a full state in the U.S. They have their senator, they have their representative at the Congress, you know, they elect the president of the United States. People in Haiti, people in Jamaica, people in Antigua, people in many of these islands, see, this is a godsend. See, a slavery was a bad thing to happen. But for us today, Africans, we could turn this negative element of our history into something extremely positive. Meaning that we could build a mighty empire where Africans will be able to be proud and go and travel and feel that they are together, they are one. And the sun will never set on that empire. That's the thing that we can have, that we have at our disposal. So yes, a country like Jamaica would have just as much, you know, senators as a country like Nigeria would have, depending on what agreement will be on the constitution, or a country like Haiti or, let's say, Bermuda, you know, will have the same rights than a country that is, let's say, Tanzania or, let's say, South Africa or Libya or Morocco.
Great. This is the end of the time we have today, but I'm wondering if there's anything that you would like to add before we let you go, especially the website where we can, where this conversation is happening.
Yes, I would like for people to log onto the website. It's African Publius, like African, I need to spell that, and Publius, PUBLIUS.com. African Publius. Publius spelled PUBLIUS.com. And, you know, and start participating in the debate. The second thing that also that we're asking people to do is that to start thinking about setting chapters where they are. Let's say, for example, in Toronto, people can start thinking about setting a chapter to prepare for this Congress, because the idea is that we want to have a mass movement. When the Congress will take place, a mass movement will already exist that can carry the action plan that will be issued from that Congress. We do not want to have a bunch of lamentation or reclamation or condemnation after the Congress. We want to have an action plan, and an action plan, only a mass movement can, you know, carry it. And therefore, we want people to start thinking about, or at least acting in the sense of having local chapters of the organizing committee. Mm-hmm. And the organizing committee is the base, the center, the hub is in Africa.
Great. Dongo, I would really like to thank you for joining us today and bringing us this conversation. Again, can you just say the website so people can log on?
www.africanpublius.com. Mm-hmm. African Publius. And I really thank for people. Thank you, Omer, for bringing me on the air.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic talking to you, and I really enjoyed explaining what this initiative is about. And I look forward to more talks.
For sure. Thank you very much for joining us, and we'll definitely have continue this conversation in the weeks and months ahead. Thanks very much.
Thank you, sister.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye bye.